various aspects of Bris Milah. As I said, this is very much on my mind because of the mitzvah that we had the opportunity to perform in our family this past week. Now, the mitzvah of Bris Milah, the Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, is one which the Jewish people have been doing besimcha, have been doing with great joy for many, many centuries. And although it has come along with great mesiras nefesh, and although there were many millennia in which it was not simple and not easy at all to perform the mitzvah of Bris Milah, this is something that has been a defining characteristic of the Jewish people for so many generations, although it has come with great adversity at times. So, with that in mind, let us see and let us understand why is it that the mitzvah of Bris Milah has become such a central, such a fundamental mitzvah for the Jewish people, and so much a defining characteristic of who a Jewish male is. So the Gemara says in Maseches Nedarim, Rabbi Omer, Gedola Mila Shehishkula Keneged Kal HaMitzvos. Mila is considered to be so fundamental, so important, that it is in some way parallel to all the mitzvahs HaTorah. Now, it's hard for us to say exactly what that means. You know, the Gemara says also, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. When we learn Torah, that's considered equal to everything else. And when you do this, so what the Gemara means when it says these kinds of statements, I don't exactly know. But what we do know is that it's obviously something that is very important. And the Gemara then goes further and says, Davar Acher, Gedola Mila She'el Malei Mila. If not for the fact that we had the mitzvah of Mila, Lo Niskayimu Shamayim Va'aretz, the world would not be worthy of standing. Which again is a troubling statement to really understand what it means. But the Gemara seems to say that Mila has a very important and significant role in our society. She'namar, Lo Brisi Yomam Va'layla, Chukos Shamayim Va'aretz Lo Samti. Now you take this a little bit further, and the Medrash Tanchuma tells us that Mila not only is the reason for the world being able to stand, and Mila is not only the most important mitzvah, she'ishkula keneged kala mitzvos, but the Medrash Tanchuma tells us even further. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak taught, Nemar b'mila avoda. When we talk about, when we describe the mitzvah of Mila, we refer to it as an avoda, which is curious, because avoda is really usually what we refer to as karbanot. That's what we do in the Beis Hamikdash. And therefore, says the Medrash, v'nemar b'karbanos avoda. When we talk about our service in the Beis Hamikdash, we refer to that as avoda as well. Ma avoda ha'amura b'karbanos damim. Just like when avoda is done in the Beis Hamikdash, it means you have to slaughter the animal, blood has to come out from the animal's neck. Af avoda ha'amura b'mila damim. So too, when we refer to avoda by the mitzvah of Mila, it means that blood has to come out, which led to a major question. I don't know if you've ever watched the Bris Milah. I'm a queasy kind of person. I don't like to. It's not my kind of thing. But I would imagine that there always is blood at a Bris Milah. After all, there's an incision that's being done. So there is a question, I don't know how, but apparently it's possible that you can have a child who has a Bris Milah and doesn't bleed. Apparently there is such a thing. I don't know how. I'm not a doctor. But apparently there is such a thing. And the question is, has the moel and has the parents, have the parents fulfilled their mitzvah of Bris Milah? When they've done the mitzvah, they've done what has to be done, but no blood came out from the incision, which is an unusual story, but it's a question that is discussed in the Achronim. And the Medrash goes further and it says, Kivin Sha'adam Metiv Tipa Acha Shaldam. Once a person performs this Bris Milah, once a person goes ahead and does what they're supposed to do and creates the incision, Hi chaviva lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki karbano, says the Medrash. That is considered as if one has offered a carbon that is so beloved. And therefore, writes the Medrash, lefikach nigla HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Avram Avinu kishamal. Therefore, God only appeared to Avram Avinu after he performed his Bris Milah, kishem shenigla b'karbanos. The same way we are told that God is present when we offer karbanos, so too he made himself present in the face of Avram Avinu when Avraham Avinu performed the Bris Milah. Now, this is not just a nice idea that the Medrash tells us that a Bris Milah is considered like a karban. We assume that this has halachic ramifications as well. For example, Rav Soloveitchik was curious about the fact that we make a Bris Milah in a shul. And he said that it's a very strange thing. After all, a shul is meant to be uniquely servicing the purposes of tefillah and the purposes of Talmud Torah. So we have public shiurim in a shul, and we come together to daven in a shul. Who gives you the right just to perform other mitzvahs in a shul? That's not really what a shul is designated for. And Rav Soloveitchik felt it was a very strange thing. So he suggested the reason why we do a Bris Milah in a shul is because we don't want to be matriach people, we don't want to bother them to go to another location in order to participate in a Bris Milah. And after all, a Bris Milah is usually done after Shachris in the morning. So once people are in shul for Shachris anyway, we may as well have them stay in the same place as not to trouble them to go somewhere else, and this is why we do a bris milah in the shul. That is the suggestion that he gave. And therefore, based on that, he said, let's say every once in a while you have a bris milah that is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, as we'll discuss a little bit later. He said it is inappropriate to have such a bris milah in a shul because it is not connected to a tefillah. We don't have to be in the shul anyway, and therefore a shul should not be used for other purposes when the bris milah is not being done together in conjunction with a tefillah. That was the opinion of Rav Soloveitchik. That is what he said. However, that is not really what many achronim suggest, and I'm sure he didn't see these achronim. I'm sure he was just figuring out on his own, but now we have the opportunity to look in so many more svarim than he had the chance to look in, and now we have all kinds of computer systems that let us find things that he never dreamed of looking at. So there's a very famous sefer on Hilchas Mila that is referred to as the Zecher David. And in the Zecher David, he writes that no, there is a fundamental reason why we do a bris mila in the shul, and that is because a shul is referred to as a mikdash ma'at. And because the shul serves for us as a miniature Beis HaMikdash, therefore, because the bris mila is in some way a form of our offering of a karban, of our own child, as parents we offer our children, and it's difficult for us to listen to our child cry, and to have our child be given over to have an incision done, and we're concerned about it, and it's with Mesiras Nefesh, and for us that is considered like our karban, therefore we assume that it should be done in the shul, specifically because the shul serves today as the Mikdash Ma'at. And therefore, writes the Zecher David, this is why we choose to make the bris in the shul, regardless of when the bris is taking place, whether it's in the morning after Shachris, in the afternoon, not connected at all to a minyan or to a tefillah. We have the shul as the place designated for the bris milah because that for us is like our miniature Beis HaMikdash today, and that is exactly where it belongs. The Chasam Sofer writes that because we assume the parents are in some way offering a karban when they give their child for a bris milah, we assume the parents should wear Big Day Shabbos, the parents should shave and take haircuts and do whatever it is that they would do in honor of a Yom Tif, because he says this is something that is a very significant day for the parents who are involved. And this is what the Shari Tshuva writes as well, that it would make sense that the father or the mother, both of the parents, should be present when the Bris Milah is taking place. Why? They shouldn't just hand their child over, let's say me. As I said, I'm a queasy person. I don't like to be present. But yesterday I had to be there when my son was having the bris. I had to stand there. Why is it necessary? Why couldn't I stand somewhere else? Why couldn't I be outside of the room? The answer is, writes the Shari Tshuva, the Gemara tells us a statement. Heich karban shel adam nikrav v'hu eino omer al gabav. Does it make sense? Imagine, I violate Shabbos 1 week. So we'll tie it in a little bit to Hilchas Shabbos because this is our Hilchas Shabbos series. So the Gemara says, how is it possible? A person does an Avera one Shabbos. A person now has to bring a Karban Chatas to the Beis HaMikdash in order to make good for the Avera that they did wrong. So I send my Karban. Here I am, up in the Golan. I'm living in my comfort zone. I'm living in a great little place there. And I don't want to take a day off of work. So I send my Karban Chatas with somebody to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Kohen is going to offer it on Wednesday afternoon. And here I am at work like any other day of the week. And I'm totally not paying attention at all to the fact that a Karban is being brought on my behalf to make a forgiveness for me, who's not even present. Says the Gemara, that doesn't make any sense. How can you have such a situation where a person offers a karban and they're not even there? And therefore writes the Shari Tshuva, how could it be that a parent is going to have a bris milah done to their child and you're not even going to be present? It doesn't make sense. And therefore the Shari Tshuva writes that the minhag has developed that the parents be present and they're there at the time when the bris milah is being done, so much so that the Shulchan Aruch writes in the name of the tour that before the bris milah is done, the father or mother should say to the moel, we are designating you to do the mitzvah on our behalf, and we're standing here, and we're going to be present because this is something that a parent should be involved in because we assume this is like a karban that's being offered on behalf of this family. And this is something that has really been a major inspiration to Jews throughout the many, many generations in which they were persecuted, in which it was not easy for them at all to perform the mitzvah of bris milah. You look on the second side of the page here, and you'll see that I made a photocopy of an amazing story that Reb Shalom Shvadron, the great Maggid of Yerushalayim, writes in his three-volume series, Sha'al Avicha V'Yageicha. So he has an amazing story about a Jew who he met from Russia. And he says that this Jew was part of a very small and discreet minion of people. Now, what was unique about this minion of people? What was so unusual about them? So he says that this minion of people was designated that under the Iron Curtain in Russia, Mesach HaBarzel, he calls it. I think that's the Iron Curtain. What? Mesach HaBarzel. So he says that under that leadership, under that regime in Russia, there was a decree that nobody was allowed to perform mitzvos, and certainly Bris Milah was one of them. Now, the Jews in Russia were resilient, and they decided they were going to do it regardless, and they were going to risk their lives. Whether it was right or was wrong is a good question, but this is what they chose to do regardless. And there was a minion of men that made themselves available, that any time there was a family who wanted to do a Bris Milah, they were going to go be present at the Bris Milah, not just to do the Bris, but they were going to be there as a minion together and make sure that everything was done properly, and they were going to do it privately, and no one was ever going to find out. Now, you had to make sure to choose people who were very discreet, who, if they were caught in the street, they would never tell anybody where they're coming from or where they're going to. So this was a man who was part of that group of the minion. So he told the following story. He says that on one occasion, this man was called upon to come to a beautiful home in which they were planning on performing the mitzvah of Bris Milah. They come to the house, and he says it was a courtyard inside of another one, and it was so hidden, it was in a cellar, who knows where it was, and he said they were hiding, that nobody should find out where the Bris Milah was taking place. So they come into the room, and they said the whole room was dressed up in festive garb, and everybody was dressed so beautifully, and so excited, and so happy, and there were tables set, and there was a big meal set up, and he couldn't believe it, that people were celebrating Bris Milah at a time when it was so difficult, when it was so dangerous for them to be doing this mitzvah. And he walks into the room, and the mohel gets ready to do his job. The parents give over the child. The mohel does his job. And right after the Bris Milah is done, naturally, we always give the child back to its mother because the mother knows how to take care of the child best. They give back the child to the mother, and all of a sudden, there's a huge commotion in the room, and people start screaming. And he turns around, and he says he sees that the mother has fainted. So somebody who's, I guess, medically savvy revives the mother. And after a couple of minutes, they ask her, what happened? Why did you faint? She tells, I'll tell you the story. She says, this child is a year old. And this child, we felt we were not able to give the Bris Milah until now because it was too risky. It was too dangerous. If any of us would be caught, we would all be killed. Now we felt it was the right time. But I was nervous that I would never have the strength to actually go ahead with this mitzvah of Bris Milah for my son. So I made a promise from the day my son was born that I'm never going to give him a kiss until the day that he has a Bris Milah. Can you imagine? This woman made a promise that she's never going to kiss her child until he has a Bris Milah. She says, I've been looking at this kid, taking care of him for a year, every single day, every night. I've never embraced this child. I've never kissed him. And now here is my first chance. How can I not faint? And it sort of gives us a picture of the incredible Mesiras Nefesh throughout all the generations. This is one story of thousands of how Jews have embraced this incredible mitzvah of Bris Milah and how they've given so much to perform the mitzvah under the most difficult of circumstances. And always, like the Gemara says, Bisimcha Gedola. It was always done with such great joy. And that never stopped anyone. As dangerous as it may have been, it never stopped anyone from performing the mitzvah the way it was supposed to be done. Yes. We have the mitzvah of Bris Milah, as we know, is something that doesn't come around too often. It's something that is what we refer to as a mitzvah haba mizman lezman. I would assume that most families don't have the opportunity to do a Bris Milah twice in 1 year, right? Most of the time we assume it's spaced a little bit more responsibly than twice in 1 year. And we assume that a Bris Milah is not something that happens every day. So whenever we have a mitzvah that comes around periodically, that doesn't happen every day, we assume that a bracha of Shehecheyanu is supposed to be recited. And in fact, if you look in the Rambam, you will notice that he says that the Aviya ben Mevarech Shehecheyanu, look at number Gimel, where the Rambam says clearly in Hilchos Milah, that when we perform the mitzvah of Bris Milah, not only do we do the mitzvah, not only do we recite the regular bracha of Itzivanu al Hamila, but we should also recite the bracha of Shehecheyanu, because we are excited to perform a mitzvah that we don't have the opportunity to do every day of the year. And therefore the Rambam says once again in Hilchos Brachos, V'chein mitzvah she'ena tadira ve'ena metzuya b'chaleis. Whenever one encounters a mitzvah that they do not do on a regular basis, harei he doma le'mitzvah shehim izman lezman, kigon milas beno u'pidyon haben. For example, the mitzvah of Bris Milah or Pidyon HaBen, Mevarech Aleihem B'Shas Asiyasam Shehecheyanu. Whenever we perform that mitzvah, we are supposed to recite Shehecheyanu. Now, by a show of hands, anyone in the room have ever been to a Bris Milah where they recited the Bracha of Shehecheyanu? No one? Because in America, we generally do not. The Svardim generally do. In Eretz Yisrael, they follow, many communities follow the Minhag of the Sfardim, which is based off the Psak of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, that when we perform a Bris Milah, a bracha of Shechiyanu is supposed to be recited, which the Rambam puts forth in a very cogent argument. He says that it makes a lot of sense. After all, it fits into the pattern of when Shechiyanu is supposed to be recited on other occasions during the year. So why is it that us Ashkenazim do not recite the bracha of Shechiyanu? Wouldn't it make a lot of sense? And the answer that's given by the Chachmei Ashkenaz, Rabbeinu Tam and the Ravya and many others, is because there is Tzara D'Yanuka. It's inappropriate. What are you going to do? The child is sitting here having an incision. The child is crying. And the father or mother is going to stand up there and say, we are so excited that our child is now in pain. Isn't that an inappropriate statement to make? And therefore we assume that Shechiyanu is not supposed to be recited, although, yes, it does follow the general category of when Shechiyanu should be said. Our Ashkenazi Rishonim feel that it's inappropriate to recite a Shechiyanu on this occasion because, after all, the child is in pain. And this is also the reason why we find that, let's say, at a chasana, we recite Shehasimcha b'ma'ona. When we bench at a chasana, we say a very special part of the benching, and we say, we thank Hashem, Shehasimcha b'ma'ona. There's an extra added special of simcha, dimension of simcha now at this moment. Why do we not say that at a bris? The Rishonim say for the same reason. Because at the same time that the parents are very happy that they were able to perform the mitzvah of bris milah, they are also a little bit concerned, and they are a little bit nervous over the fact that the child is in pain, and they're hoping that everything will be okay, and therefore we assume both Shechiyanu is not recited, as well as Shehasimcha b'ma'ono that we normally say at a wedding. Both of those are left out. Now, we have the source for the mitzvah of Bris Milah is in Parshas Tazria, and there the Torah tells us, Isha ki Tazria, when a woman will conceive, v'yalda zachar, and she will give birth to a baby boy. Then we are told that she has to go through Yemei Tumah V'Tahara, and finally by Yom HaShemini, Yimol Besar Arlaso. On the eighth day, the child is supposed to have a bris. And from here the Gemara learns that by Yom HaShemini, that a bris milah has to be done during the daytime. A bris milah cannot be performed at night. And that includes, a bris milah also cannot be performed before the sun comes up. That's also considered to be night. Now, when does a halachic day start? You ever think about it? When does a halachic day start? We have two different times in the morning. One is called Alos HaShachar, and one is what we refer to as Hanetz HaChama. What is the difference between Alos HaShachar and Hanetz HaChama? Hanetz HaChama means when the sun is visible on the horizon. So what is Alos HaShachar? That's before that. What is that? No, sunrise is Hanetz HaChama. That's when you can see the sun. What is Alos HaShachar? That is 72 minutes before when the sun starts breaking out. We cannot see it yet, but when light starts to come into the sky, that is when we assume the time of Alos HaShachar begins. So the Gemara says in Meseches Megillah Daf Chaf that really daytime officially starts 72 minutes earlier than with the time when we actually see the sun on the horizon. Daytime really begins at Alos HaShachar. However, when we have a mitzvah that's supposed to be performed during the day, for example, Bris Milah, or let's say saying Hallel, which can be said only during the day, or shaking the lulav, which has to be done only during the daytime hours, we assume that all of those are really only supposed to be done after Hanetz HaChama. Why is that the case? Why is that the case? If the day already starts 72 minutes earlier, wouldn't it be more convenient to take care of it earlier? Not for a Bris Milah, obviously. Nobody wants to get up so early, but let's say I have to go out to work on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and I don't want to wait until the Zman to shake the Lulav after Hanetz HaChama. I want to shake Lulav early in the morning, get the train, and go daven at work, go daven in the city somewhere. Why can I not do that? Why do we assume that you have to wait until after Hanetz HaChama if really, technically, the day already begins an hour earlier? And the answer that the Rishonim posit is because we are concerned that since the sun is not yet visible, maybe somebody will make a mistake, and they don't know exactly when the day begins. So therefore we assume you have to wait until Hanetz HaChama, because that's when you know with certainty that it already is daytime hours. Now, there was a major discussion raised by the Aderis. The Aderis was actually the father-in-law of Rav Kook. So the Stechemed was a contemporary of the Aderis. The Stechemed wrote a big encyclopedia about all kinds of halachic topics. So the Stechemed writes that he got a letter from his friend the Aderis, who was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, and the Aderis, he was the Abbezin and Panovich, he was a very well-recognized Talmud Chacham before his daughter married Rav Kook. And the Aderis writes a letter to his friend, the Stechemed, in which he argues that we have many people who go out to work on the farms on Sukkos, and they shake lulav very early in the morning, way before Hanetzach Hama. What is the justification? You ever had a situation where you had to go off to catch a plane somewhere and you daven early? You're not really supposed to, but we know that B'Shas HaDchak you're allowed to. Why is that? Well, writes the Stechemed, maybe the justification that he thought of was because the fact that nowadays we have watches. No one's going to make a mistake. And therefore he says nowadays, where we know exactly what time the sun rises, and we know exactly when nightfall begins, and we know when Alos HaShachar is, we no longer have to be in doubt as to whether or not we should assume we're doing this within the proper time. Are we really doing it during the day or at night? We don't have to wait for the sun to actually be visible into the sky for us to be allowed to daven Shachris and say Hallel and shake Lulav and do all the mitzvahs that we have to do. Writes the Aderith, maybe that's the justification why all the people today shake the Lulav early in the morning, even before Hanetzach Hama. Because we no longer have to be concerned for this concern that the Rishonim outline in Maseches Megillah and Daf Chach. And this was a major point of contention. Do we have the right today to say that just because we've become more efficient in knowing our Zmanim well, do we have a right to assume that now the laws change and now we can already do a mitzvah early in the morning? Major, major point of debate, a major point of discussion. And this was something that piqued the curiosity of the Stechemed. Should we assume that the Aderis is correct or should we assume not? Generally, we try our best to wait until Hanetzach Hama to do all the mitzvahs that we have the obligation to do during the daytime hours. I had an interesting question a number of months ago. I think I mentioned it in one of the shiurim, and that was from a medical student. So he was on rotation, and he sent a very fascinating question, and that was, I assume that his shift was all night long, so he was exhausted. By the time he got home, he ran into shul to daven shacharis in the morning. He quickly put on his tefillin, and he caught up with the tzibur wherever they were up to, and he davened shacharis. It sounded to me like right after he finished his quiet Shmona Esrei, he was so exhausted and he needed to go to sleep, so he took off his tefillin, he left shul, and he went home. Went home to take a nap, he didn't finish davening. What he didn't realize was that it was Rosh Chodesh. Now, he would have realized had he stayed till the end of davening. He didn't realize only because he took off his tefillin right away and he left. So he didn't realize that they davened Musaf and they said Halal and that the Chazan said Yalav Yavo. So then he goes to sleep, and before he's off to his shift for the evening shift that night, he goes to daven mincha and shul. Usually, shul's daven mincha 10 minutes before the shkia. So he comes to shul, he davens mincha 10 minutes before the shkia, and he hears them make an announcement, Yalav Yavo. So he sends me a text and he says, what do I do now? I didn't realize it was Rosh Chodesh. I have like 5 minutes left to shkia, and I realize I haven't yet said Musaf for the day. I realize I haven't yet said Yalav Yavo, which means that my shachris this morning didn't work, so I have to daven another Shmona Esrei. I also haven't said Hallel. Which one am I supposed to do in the 5 minutes that I have left? So I conveniently ignored him because I didn't know what the answer was, and I figured whatever he does, I don't know what to say. And 5 minutes after Shki, I wrote back to him, I just got your message, I don't know what to say. But now it's too late. I happened to have called my father a couple of weeks later to ask him what?
So whatever you did was fine.
I'm sure God loved whatever he did. But I called my father a couple of weeks later to ask him, what was I supposed to tell this person? He was shocked. Shai, you don't know the answer? This is obvious. You know, the Nevi Yehuda talks about it in his Chidushim on the Tzlach and Brachos. I don't know. I guess that's why my father's my father and I am myself. But apparently it's an obvious answer if you know everything. But I don't. So what's the answer? It's a great question. The answer, number one, you certainly knock out Hallel. Because Hallel, as beautiful as it is, and as much as we love to say Hallel, we assume that reciting Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is not obligatory. We assume Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is only a minhag. It was a minhag that developed. This is why we only say parts of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. We don't say the complete Hallel, because Hallel is never a real obligation. So when you have to triage and you only have 5 minutes left, so Hallel for sure gets knocked out. What? Hallel certainly gets knocked out because Hallel is only a minhag. It is not an absolute obligation. So Hallel is for sure out. Mincha, he just davened. So mincha is out of the way. Now, it's a question between Shachris, the makeup of Shachris, and Musaf that he has to daven. So that's a major question, which one comes first? Do you do Shachris or Musaf? And that's what my father told me is a major discussion. He said, look it up. I don't even know where to look it up. So I still have to work on it. But hopefully the question won't come up again. So it's an interesting question. But the whole premise of the question is that all of these mitzvahs are only able to be done during the day. So once it turns nightfall, it's over. Avar yama bata karbana. Once it's over, it's over. So you cannot have a makeup then. That is that is the premise of the question. Now, as we know, you have to wait 8 days in order to perform a bris milah. How do we calculate the 8 days? This is a very good question. Let's say we had our child. When did we have the child? What time was it? I think 10:40. Very good. Thank you. I'm very impressed. Okay. So we had, I wish I was paying attention. So we had our child at 10:40. And the question is, you have to wait 8 days. So we had the child on 10:40 Sunday morning. So let's do the math. 8 days after 10:40 would be when? Sunday morning, 10:40.
Could you do it before 10:40?
So are you able to do it before 10:40 on Sunday morning? Yes. Why? But you haven't waited 8 days. So the answer is you need to wait 8 halachic days, which means 8 shkia sachama. So even if my child was born at 4:30 in the afternoon, which is a half hour before shkia, that counts as day one. And we certainly don't have to wait until 8 days later at 4:30 in the afternoon to do the bris milah. So we assume when it comes to a bris milah, the way you calculate days is 8 halachic days, which means 8 suns that set, 8 sunsets. Not suns that set, 8 sunsets from the time that the child was born. We assume that is when the bris milah is allowed to be done. Immediately in the morning, that is the time when is appropriate for the bris milah to be done. Now this has an interesting application to other issues as well. Let's say a bar mitzvah. So we celebrate a bar mitzvah when the child is 13 years old, or when a girl is 12 years old. Do we have to look back at the birth certificate to find out when exactly was the child born? And 13 years later is when we celebrate the bar mitzvah? Is that what we need to do? No. So what do you say? 13 halachic years.
13 in a day.
What? So 13 in a day. But what does it mean? Into the 13th year, do you have to wait until the time when the child was actually born in order to assume that that child is now a bar or bas mitzvah or not? So you'll say, what's the difference? Well, the difference is as follows. Say, for example, just it gives it a little bit of an easier tone to understand. Say, for example, my child was born on Rosh Hashanah, which he wasn't. But say, for example, my child is born on Rosh Hashanah, says bar mitzvah is going to be Rosh Hashanah 13 years later. But he was born at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, he goes, he has an obligation to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah because now he is an adult. As a child, he doesn't have that obligation. So take, for example, my child was born 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Rosh Hashanah. We blow the shofar in shul at 10 o'clock in the morning. So, if you'll say he's only a bar mitzvah at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it turns out 4 o'clock strikes. Now he's an obligation to blow the shofar, and he hasn't yet done his obligation. Why? Because yes, he heard the shofar in shul this morning, but he was a child at the time. And a child cannot fulfill his obligation for an adult. So would you tell this kid on his bar mitzvah at 13 years old on Rosh Hashanah that he has to go hear the shofar again at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Or take for a more common example, which I assume comes up all the time. So you have a child who's born 4 o'clock in the afternoon. No, not a good example. Let's say you have a child who's born 12 o'clock at night. Okay? So we make the bar mitzvah 6 o'clock in the evening. Everyone comes together. Everyone's all excited. The child davens Maror for the Yamid and it's great. You have a minion. Everyone's all happy. He's doing his first minion. Everyone's very happy. Okay. So he davens Maror. And he has an obligation to say Kriya Shema. That's a biblical obligation. But maybe he's not yet a bar mitzvah, because he was born at 12 o'clock at night. So maybe he's not an adult until 12 o'clock at night. So do we have to wake him up at 12 o'clock that night to say Kriya Shema again? Because maybe he hasn't yet fulfilled his obligation, which is a biblical obligation, and Safek Deraisa L'Chumra. Well, thankfully, we paskin like the Magen Avraham and all the other classical Achronim, which assume that a bar mitzvah also goes by halachic years. We don't assume that you have to wait till the exact moment when the child was born. However, the Netziv, one of the great Gedolim in the 1900s, the Netziv points out that the She'iltos, who was one of the most important Gaonim in the 7th century, that the She'iltos is of the opinion that you have to wait until the moment when the child was born. And the Netziv goes so far as to argue, had the other Gedolim had the manuscript of the She'iltos that I have, they never would have said otherwise. It's an interesting assumption to make. Had anyone else seen what I saw, now he's assuming nobody had what he had, had anyone else seen the source that I saw from the She'iltos in the 7th century, nobody would have dared to argue with the opinion of the She'iltos, and everybody would have agreed that a bar mitzvah is not considered a bar mitzvah until the exact moment when he was born 13 years ago. Now, if the Netziv is correct, we got major problems. Because the child has to be woken up at 12 o'clock at night to say Kriya Shema again, and the kid on Rosh Hashanah who was born, who heard Tkiyah Shofar this morning, has to be schlepped back to the shul to hear Shofar again, and you have all kinds of issues. So there are some who do that. I don't know, when I became a bar mitzvah, this is not what my father made me do. I feel if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for all of us. And we did not require that the bar mitzvah child should have to do everything over again because he was born at 12 o'clock at night, and therefore we have to be worried for this opinion of the Shiltas. We generally assume that Magen Avraham and others are correct, that we count halachic years, we do not count 24-hour intervals. What about when we come to Shevar Brachos? What is the law then? So, Shevar Brachos means after a couple gets married, you have 7 days of celebration where you make the brachos whenever you have a meal. Now, we've spoken many times in the past about all the various aspects of Shevar Brachos and what are the qualifications to allow for Shevar Brachos to be said, but most fundamentally, how do you count the 7 days? How do you count the 7 days of Shevar Brachos? So number one, a mistake that people often make is the day of the wedding counts as day one. If you have a wedding on a Sunday afternoon, so Sunday is day one of Shevar Brachos, and therefore, in higher mathematics, the last day of Shevar Brachos will be... What? Let's count. Sunday is the wedding. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. So Shabbos will be the last day. Now, very often an issue that we run into is, so you have Shabbos, a very great celebration over Shabbos, that's the last day of Shevar Brachos, correct? So you're going to have the last Shevar Brachos is going to be Shalashudas. Shalashudas, very often everybody's kumbayaing and singing songs and benching late. The problem is after the Shkia, you're not able to say Shevar Brachos anymore, according to most Echaronim. Why? Because you are no longer within the 7 days from when the couple got married. So you have to be aware of that when you're making the Shabbos Shevar Brachos, which is the last day on some occasions when the last day is Shabbos. You have to make sure that the benching is before the Shkia. Now here's the question. So the couple gets married, what time on Sunday? Correct, same thing. So you have to make sure that Sunday the benching is before the Shkia on Sunday afternoon. Right. So Monday is the first day. That's correct. Yeah. So now here's what? Yes, correct. So that's actually, I shouldn't say correct. That's half correct. Because it's a major machlokas harishonim. Let's say by every Shabbos. Let's say every Shabbos shalashudas. So the practice all over the world is that we bench even after the Shkia, and we'd say, my father is careful never to do that. I remember growing up, my father always was careful never ever to allow himself to bench after the Shkia, because it's a major discussion in the Rishonim. Do you have a right to say Ritzay after Shabbos is over? In Shulchan Aruch, we assume that we go Basar Tchilas Hasuda. It depends what the beginning of the meal was. If the beginning of the meal was on Shabbos, therefore you say Ritzay at the end of the benching, even if you're davening, even if you're benching an hour after the Shkia, it doesn't make a difference. That is the halach with regard to Shabbos. Now with regard to Purim, that's a major, major discussion. What if my Purim Seuda goes well into the night? Should I assume that I'm still allowed to say Al Anisim in the benching or not? By Shabbos, some argue maybe the reason why you're allowed to still say Ritzay after the Shkia is because there's such a concept of Tosefes Shabbos. Much to our dismay, there's no such thing as Tosefes Purim. And there's also no such thing as Tosefes Shevar Brachos. So therefore, we assume that it's much more questionable when it comes to Purim, and certainly when it comes to Shevar Brachos, there are many other factors that make it questionable by Shevar Brachos. So we assume that one should be very careful by Shevar Brachos to finish before the Shkia, and by Purim as well, it's a major discussion whether or not Al Anisim should be recited if you're benching after the Shkia. I think the minhag all over the world is that Purim as well, you say Al Anisim even when the benching is done after the Shkia. I know in my parents' home, my father's always very careful about this to make sure to bench every Shabbos before the Shkia, to bench on Purim before the Shkia, but not everybody is so strict and careful the way he is, but that's what he personally does. So as we said, the way that you count days for a child, for a bris milah, is 8 halachic days. And you do not have to wait until the moment that the child was born on the 8th day in order to perform the bris milah. Now the Rambam has a very famous, a somewhat poetic line where he writes as follows. Look at number Dalet. Rambam says, "Ein malin el avlad she'ein bo shum choli." You're only allowed to perform a bris milah on a child who is not sick, on a child who is healthy. Why is that? She'sakanos nefashos dochas hakol. Because the most important thing in the world is that we look out for people's well-being. Ve'efshur lama la'achar zman, he says, yes, you have a mitzvah of bris milah that you need to perform, but you can always do it tomorrow. Ve'efshur la'achzer nefesh achas me'yisrael le'olam, says the Rambam. A beautiful line. If a child is lost as a result of our performing a bris milah when we shouldn't have done it, there is no way to bring that child back. There is always a way to have a makeup for the bris milah tomorrow, but there is never a makeup for a child who inappropriately had a bris milah and lost his life as a result. And therefore the Rambam says, you are only allowed to perform a bris milah on a child who is healthy. Now this is one of the most delicate and sensitive shilas that a rabbi gets. And a rabbi has to be so careful, because a rabbi who knows nothing about medicine cannot be the one tasked with answering such a shaila. I know that my father gets these questions all the time, and he never will paskin the shaila on his own. He always will send the shaila to Dr. Abraham in Eretz Yisrael, who is a great Talmud Chacham, who is a great doctor, who is very well versed in medicine, and he always asks him to determine whether or not the bris milah should be held off or the bris milah should be done on time. It is not something that a rabbi who knows nothing about these issues should ever feel comfortable taking the responsibility to answer, because these are very, very consequential issues that can have very dangerous outcomes should we not answer the question properly. Should a child be sick in a way that we refer to it as a chole kol haguf, if a child has a fever, and therefore we refer to that as a chole kol haguf, where the entire body is ill, so we assume that the child's bris has to be delayed. Now, how much do we delay it? So many people mistakenly think we wait until the child is better. Not correct. We wait until the child is better, which means when the doctors tell us that the child is now healthy enough to have a bris milah, now we wait 7 days from that time in order to perform the bris milah. That is the halacha. If you have a child who is sick, you certainly cannot perform the bris milah when the child is sick. But we need to wait until the doctors give us clearance to do a bris milah, and only then does the count start 7 days later. Now, you ever wonder why you're invited to a bris milah every once in a while that takes place at 4:15 in the afternoon? And you wonder to yourself, how did that happen? Why did we wait until 4:15? Didn't we just say that we wait 8 halachic days? We don't wait until the moment that the child was born. Well, the answer is, that means that the child was sick, and the doctors finally gave a clearance for the child to have a bris milah at 4:15 7 days ago. And here, because we're dealing with a medical and a scientific reality of a child who's not well, we wait 7 scientific days, 7 24-hour periods from the time that the doctor said the child is healthy enough to have a bris. We wait until 7 days from that time, not 7 halachic days, but 7 24-hour days, until we can have the bris milah done 7 days later. So that is a very important thing to be aware of. And that is something that we need to think about whenever we have a child who perhaps is questionably healthy enough to have a bris milah. Now we get to an issue of a bris milah that takes place on Shabbos. Every so often you have a child who's born on Shabbos. 2 out of our 4 boys were born on Shabbos. So the question is, what do you do about a bris milah on Shabbos? The Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos, as well as in Maseches Yuma, we are told that we learn from the pasuk in Parshas Tazria, Isha ki Tazria v'yalda zachar. When you have a woman who conceives and has a child, Bayom Hashmini Yimal Basar Laso, on the 8th day, that is when the bris milah should take place. Says the Gemara, we learn from the fact that it says Bayom Hashmini, that means Bayom Hashmini Afilu B'Shabbos. Whenever the 8th day falls out, that is when the bris milah is performed. Doesn't matter whether it's a Sunday or a Tuesday or a Shabbos, we are performing the bris milah regardless. And the Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos Kuf Lamed Gimel, which is the bottom entry on the sheet, Osin Kotzarche Hamila B'Shabbos, we are allowed to do, and we are supposed to do, all of the things necessary to perform a bris milah on Shabbos, should the 8th day fall out on Shabbos, which means we do the milah, we do the priya, we do the mitzitza, v'nosn aleh isfalinis, and we put a bandage on it, and we put all kinds of ointments on it. We do whatever needs to be done, because the pasuk says, Bayom Hashmini Afilu B'Shabbos. However, the exception to the rule is, if you have a child that is not born naturally, the Gemara refers to it as a yotzei dofen, which is a strange way to refer to a child who had a C-section. It says it came out of the walls. How did it come out of the walls? Right? So we refer to that as a C-section. It's interesting that the Rishonim write that they heard that there's such a thing as a child being cut open, you know, as a woman being cut open and a child being taken out and a woman survives. They said this is something that's above a mice, they've never heard of such a thing. How can it be? It's like amazing that we take it for granted, and the Rishonim said they never dreamed of such a thing. But the Gemara discusses it. A yotzei dofen means when you have a C-section, in such a case, that bris is not supposed to be performed on Shabbos, is not allowed to be done on Shabbos, because we assume that you need to have in chronological order. You need to have a woman who conceives and then gives birth to a child naturally, That is when the child is able to have their bris done, even on Shabbos, by Yom HaShmini, Yimal Basar Allah. So that's outlining the pasuk in Parshas Tazria. But when you're missing that stage, when you don't have a child that's born naturally, we assume that bris milah is not allowed to be performed on Shabbos. A question that is often asked is, what about if you have the birth is assisted by a vacuum or a forceps delivery, something like that? Should we assume that such a child is able to have the bris done on Shabbos or not? The answer is yes, because that's called a natural delivery. He just had some aid along the way, but that is considered a natural delivery for all intents and purposes, and we assume that such a child is allowed to have a bris on Shabbos. One very sensitive and very contemporary and contentious issue that is spoken about in our times is, what if a child had a natural delivery but did not have a natural conception? So nowadays we have very often we are very pleased that many couples who are unable to naturally conceive now have the ability to have children through IVF or other methods. So the question is, when you have a child who is born through, who is conceived through the unnatural means of conception, there's a major discussion based on a comment of Rabbeinu Hananel, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, should we assume that such a child is able to have a bris milah on Shabbos or not? And this was a major point of discussion amongst the Gedolim of the last 25-30 years. Should we assume that that's called natural, or should we assume that perhaps that is like a maisa nisim, that is like a miracle, and therefore such a bris is not allowed to be performed on Shabbos? And this would cause major, major problems. Should we assume that such a child is not allowed to have a bris on Shabbos? Because you're going to have somebody who calls a mo'el and says, you know, we had a baby, mazel tov, great, when is the bris? Shabbos. The first question the mo'el is going to ask is, well, was it a natural birth or was it a C-section? Obviously, he needs to ask that question. Okay, that's not such a sensitive question. But now you're going to tell me the mo'el has to ask a further question. Well, I'm sorry to ask you, but was it a natural conception or perhaps it happened via other means? Which is something that's such private information that couples don't generally share with others. And let's say they share it with the mo'el. So now the bris is going to be pushed off, perhaps, to Sunday because the conception was not natural. So now what are they going to tell the family? The child was sick? Well then, why are you doing it on Sunday? You have to wait a week. What are you going to say? The mo'el wasn't available, so get another mo'el. How are you going to explain why the bris is not happening on Shabbos? Not so simple. Not so simple. And this is a major point of discussion, a major point of debate. I don't know if people were here when we made the bris, but it was a very great honor that Rav Asher Weiss surprised us by writing a 150-page sefer in honor of the bris. I'm not sure how he did that in a week. But we gave it out at the bris. And in there, he has a 4-page tshuva in which he argued that that he does not agree with all the opinions of many other greats of the last 25-30 years, and he feels that a child who was conceived through unnatural means, a child who was conceived through IVF or something of that nature, is allowed to have the bris milah performed on Shabbos as every other child as well, and there's no need for a mo'el to ever ask or to inquire about how the conception took place or what exactly happened. What? Good for him. Yes. Let me make one last point, and that is the following. The Gemara tells us in a number of places that sometimes when you have a mitzvah that converges with Shabbos, we assume that the mitzvah gets pushed aside because we have a concern about Chilul Shabbos. For example, the Gemara tells us very famously in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chavtes, we have a biblical obligation to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. We all know that when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, that we do not blow the shofar. Why is that? The answer is because the Chachamim were concerned that somebody might violate the laws of Shabbos. How are you going to violate the laws of Shabbos? Well, says the Gemara as follows. We have somebody who's designated as the Baal Tokeya. We're concerned that maybe that person who was designated as the Baal Tokeya did not prepare properly, and therefore he's going to run Rosh Hashanah morning outside into the street to go to the expert's house to learn how to blow shofar quickly before davening. And he's going to carry the shofar outside without a neiriv, and therefore we're concerned, maybe he's going to violate the laws of Shabbos, so therefore we get rid of shofar on Shabbos. That's what the Gemara says. And similarly, the Gemara tells us, should Purim fall out on Shabbos, we would not lay in the Megillah on Shabbos. Why is that? Because you have somebody who's designated to lay in the Megillah. Maybe they did not prepare properly. They're going to run out Shabbos morning to go learn from the expert how to lay in the Megillah properly in shul, and therefore they're going to carry the Megillah outside. We cannot allow for this to happen, so therefore we push Megillah aside because Shabbos is more important than the Megillah. And the same goes for shaking the lulav. Why do we not shake the lulav on Shabbos? because we're concerned maybe somebody doesn't know exactly how to shake it, and therefore we're concerned they're going to go to someone's house to learn how to do it, and they're going to carry it outside without a nerve. Ask the Rishonim, why are we allowed to perform a bris milah on Shabbos? Shouldn't we be concerned that maybe the mohel is going to carry his items outside? Why aren't we concerned about that? And he's going to carry it outside without an Erev. So somebody said last night, don't you see the Gemara tells us what we just learned, the number Ches, don't you see the Gemara says you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for a bris milah? So the same way you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, you should be allowed to carry all the utensils outside. Now, that's not a good answer. Why? Because all the things that are listed in the Gemara are things that are necessary to be done in order for a bris milah to take place. You need to do an incision. You can't have a bris milah without the incision. You cannot do the bris milah without putting the ointment on that the child should be healthy. There's no way around it. You could have a bris milah without carrying outside if the mohel was responsible enough before Shabbos to do what he had to do and bring his utensils to the place where they were supposed to be. Correct? So therefore, that is not listed in the Gemara's allowance for what could be done on Shabbos when you have a bris milah that coincides with Shabbos. So why is it that we're not concerned that the mohel is going to run outside with his knife and whatever it is that he has to violate the laws of Shabbos? Why do we ever allow for a bris milah to be done on Shabbos? The answer to that is very simple, the Rishonim say. Because our concern by all these other cases was, maybe the Baal Tokeah didn't prepare and he doesn't know how to do it, so he's going to run to someone's house to learn. And maybe the one who's designated as the Baal Koreh for the Megillah doesn't know how to do it, so he's going to run to someone's house. A Mohel who doesn't know what he's doing should never be hired to be a Mohel. So we don't have to be concerned that on Shabbos morning he's going to start scrambling to find out, how do I do this? You know, somebody hired me to be a Mohel, I'm not really sure how to do the job. No. That's not something we have to be concerned about because the mohel probably did his homework beforehand and we don't have to be concerned. The Netziv raises the question, if I'm not mistaken, why aren't we concerned on Pesach night? There are so many details about how exactly to eat the matzah. You have to eat this much matzah, that much matzah, the round matzah, the square matzah, and you have to do it while you're leaning on this side, on the other side, and you have to do it while you're drinking the four cups of wine, and you have to do it intermittent within the Haggadah. There are so many details about exactly how to eat the matzah and how not to eat the matzah on the night of the Seder and whether you're allowed to put salt on it, where you're not allowed to. Why are we concerned if Pesach falls out on the night of Shabbos on Friday night? Why shouldn't we say no one's allowed to eat matzah? Because maybe you're going to run to the rabbi's house to ask him, did I do it properly? Did I eat enough? I was sitting on this side, on the other side. You're going to run to the rabbi with the matzah. Why aren't we concerned about that? It's an interesting question. But seemingly we are not concerned. And one final issue that we have to think about is, when it comes to a bris milah, this also is a very contemporary question, which I always found very troubling. Very troubling. I never really understood it. L'tzareinu harav, many of us have relatives who are not religious. So let's say we have a healthy child is born, and the bris milah is supposed to be done on Shabbos because it was a natural childbirth, and everything's scheduled to be done. We know from the outset that all the non-frum relatives are going to travel on Shabbos and be mechal Shabbos to come and attend the bris. So there was a major debate that broke out about 35 years ago amongst the greats of our generation. Should we assume that the bris milah should be postponed till Sunday, if you know that by doing it on Shabbos, there are relatives who are going to violate Shabbos? Now, that's a very troubling question to me. Why? I'm not trying to oversimplify the issue, but when you break it down, when you think about it, what does their Chilul Shabbos have to do with my mitzvah that I have to do? I have to do the mitzvah of bris milah on my child. They want to drive here, it's their problem. What does that have to do with me? Why should we push off my bris milah for my child just because I have a first cousin or an aunt or an uncle who's going to drive on Shabbos that they shouldn't be doing? What does that have to do with me? But this was a major point of dispute, a major debate. I mentioned this in a shir a number of months ago. I mentioned both sides and all the arguments, and somebody sent me the following email. Who sent me the email? Rabbi Avi Jurovel, who's a rabbi. He's one of the mashgichim in the OU. He sent me the following story. Listen, I'm reading straight from his email. Rabbi Hanina Poser of blessed memory was learning in Kollel in Lakewood. I want this to be on record because it's a fascinating story. His wife gave birth to a baby boy. He was their one and only child. The bris was supposed to be on a Shabbos. His parents, who were not Shomrei Shabbos, were elated. They had a grandson. Very exciting. They told him they are coming to Lakewood for the bris. He said, great, please come for Shabbos. They refused. They were not interested in coming for Shabbos. They're not religious. Why would they want to come for Shabbos to Lakewood? He told them not to drive on Shabbos and not to come if they planned on driving. Their response was, we will see you at the bris on Shabbos. We are coming. Since Rabbi Posner was not so fluent in Yiddish at the time, he asked his brother-in-law, Rabbi Shlomo Gissinger, I don't know who that is, to call Rav Henkin. Now, Rav Henkin was the gadol in America before Rav Moshe came onto the scene. So, He asked his brother-in-law to call Rav Henkin to talk to him and ask him what to do. Rav Henkin responded, "Make the bris on Sunday." I related this story to Rabbi Mordechai Zimmerman of blessed memory and asked him if he knew about such a psak from Rav Henkin. His response was, "I heard it many times from him." That's an amazing story. It's an amazing story, and it's in line with what many other great gedolim of the last 35 years have argued as well. And this is a major discussion that needs to be thought about. When we have relatives that we know are going to be Mechala Shabbos because of a bris that we are performing on Shabbos, should we assume that that is a good enough reason to push the bris off to Sunday because we don't want them to be Mechala Shabbos? Or do you say no? The only time you push off a bris is when there's Chilul Shabbos that's included in the bris itself that's inappropriate. But over here, where this is a secondary Chilul Shabbos from an outside party that has nothing to do with my particular mitzvah that's before me, why should that impact whether or not I have the right to do the mitzvah that I'm supposed to do? Maybe we should say you go ahead with the bris, and if people choose to be Mechala Shabbos, that's the choice that they're making, but that should in no way impact the mitzvah that I am tasked with doing on the Shabbos that is before me. So these are some of the issues that come up in a very contemporary way with regard to the mitzvah of Bris Milah. And Amir Tzashem, we should all continue to have simchas together and to share in each other's mitzvahs that we do, all together.